Welcome to Can You Handle the Truth about modifying human behavior and also possibly mind control? We have an expert on this today, Dr. William Horton. He teaches psychology of influence at the level it's actually used in the real world. He is the author of a book, and it's called Behind the Curtain, FBI and CIA Secrets. And he is a teacher and preeminent figure in neuro-linguistic programming, which is NLP. So, how did I do on the introduction?
That
Anything you'd like
was,
to add?
no, that was good. Just a psychologist, and that would be it. Yes, that's good.
Okay, excellent. Okay, so we're going to dive right into some good questions. This is going to
Okay.
be quite interesting and fascinating for most of us lay people. What's the biggest FBI myth people believe about reading human behavior?
Probably would be, when they see the highlights of something, and of course it gets put on social media, and then it, two things. The first would be taking body language, because then there's all these body language experts out there, and they'll say things like, the classic would be, if somebody does this, it means they're closing off, right? Or they're being deceptive or whatever, right? There may be some truth to that, but if you really understand it, all of the people really trained in this goes, you can't make a judgment on anyone's behavior or their personality until you get a baseline. How do they normally act? If you got me, I constantly stand around like this, right? It's just, right? It's just the way it is. So if that's my baseline, then if I was asking an uncomfortable question, I'd probably shift, right? But people just lock into this or that, right? That, and of course, the whole problem with a lot of things, which is people mistake what they see on television and in the movies for reality.
Really?
Yeah,
I
it's
was being
like,
facetious, yes.
yeah, I know. It's like, it's like, well, like when it comes to, like, let's say a negotiation, right? Hostage crisis. Now it's called crisis, but hostage. You watch the movies. There's a couple good movies. I like the actors. And the negotiator's in charge. In the real world, it's the SWAT team leader.
Really?
It's the command, he's usually the commander. And he doesn't care what the negotiator says. If he decides we're going in the real world, the negotiator go, yes, sir. It's the military, it's if you've been around it, no sergeant's gonna look at a general and say, no, can't do that. Right? It's like, so that or they there was a pretty good TV show, but it drove me crazy. Lie to Me, right? And then people thought it was. Well, I even heard the actor say the bad part is people come up to him and read me. It's like I'm an actor. I have no. It was words on a script, right? But they people see that and think it's that easy and. What the guy did and what the writer did, and it looked like he did research, was good. But you don't do that in 10 minutes. Right? I mean, it takes a while. So that's probably the biggest myths, and that and then I'll close with, I keep adding, Jesus, sound like a politician. I'm closing and then keep going. But the idea that, that like I say, it's fast, it's easy. And the fact that you can really tell if somebody's lying. You can never tell if anyone's lying. There's no such thing as a lie detector. Even the thing they put you on, it's a stress management tool. Stress or stress, it tests your stress level, right? So if you're talking to me and I see some shift, if that's what I was looking for, does it mean you're lying? No, it just means that could be a stressful conversation you don't want to have,
Sure.
And you see in some of the, every once in a while you see a good one on TV or in a movie where a person goes, you seem uncomfortable with that question. Can I ask you? And then they, and so things like that. It's a lot of fun.
So, in your experience, and I'm going to just ask you for two examples here. You can take a second. What is the as you've done this for decades, correct? You have experienced a lot of different people. What would be the most obvious signs that you saw And then on the flip side, what would be somebody that you had a really, really hard time reading?
Okay. Well, I'll start with the second part, right?
Okay.
The hardest people to read, at least in my opinion, are people that are street people. They're on the street, or even if they've been on the street recently, right? It's like trying to read sometimes guys coming back from combat, right? You're lit like street people. If you live on the street, and you see this a lot with like clinical specialty addictions, things like that. It's literally life and death,
Right.
right? And because they know in the back of their head, if I upset you, Mr. Steve, you seem like a nice guy. If you kill me, cops are probably going to say, well, what did he do to deserve it, right?
Yep.
And so they're up better at reading people, right? And so they're hard to read. They're always judging the situation. Reading others, the myth is the more intelligent you are, more educated you are, and even higher socioeconomic class are harder to read. Au contraire. Au contraire. Right? The
Yep.
higher up you go, you're so in your head, you become easier to read.
Okay.
So. And again, just read. It's like, what's going on in there? You don't know, but you can use that to
Sure. Yep.
influence people. There you go.
So have you had a particular instance where some obvious lies just jumped out at you?
Oh, yeah. I was at a conference, right? And I'm at my little booth, selling my stuff, classes, NLP stuff. And this person came up, and I knew a little bit. Just again, you can't read. It's a lot harder to read cold. If I've never met you, I don't know anything about you, then
Right.
it's different. But this person that came up and started talking to me, I knew, because he's in the world with that I'm in. I could research this, and he starts asking me a question about what have I got, like a new book or new courses and da 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 da, right? And I said, I'm always working on new stuff. Can I ask you, what in particular are you looking to do with this, or what do you want? And he did one of these, right? Lip pursing, list lippy. I just knew he was thinking about how does he want to say this, right? And his blink rate increased. And I went, because we both know. If you buy this course or get this book, you're gonna duplicate it in your words on your website in a couple months. And he just like, and again, he bit his lip, kind of. It's called lip pursing. Sometimes you see the lick the lips, blinks a couple times, and then he goes, and I go, it's all business. I got no problem with it. I haven't had an original idea in my life, to be honest with you. I've taken multiple ideas and put them
Sure,
together.
right.
There's no new ideas under the sun. Isn't that Shakespeare? So that was a good example of that. And I get along with the person. It's like, so it was kind of funny. And he did go, you are pretty good at reading people. I'm
Yeah.
like,
So you touched on some visuals there. So what would be What are some common verbal cues that someone is lying that most people completely miss?
Well, one of the biggest that people do, it's called a resume answer. Steve, how could you question me on this? I'm the deacon in the church. I do community service. What's that got to do with, were you at the strip club whatever the question was. It's like, so they go into a resume, and to be honest with you, because I don't care what people think, just listen to any politician. Right. And they'll do that, especially if they're asked a question that they have no personal experience, but they're calling out another person, and if you understand it, you're like, what? That's got nothing to do with, And I understand it's politics and they're only going to get their talking points and all that. But every once in a while, you see it fall through, you know, because going back, I'll tell the story because it's not amusing. It's really kind of sad. Is back at the height of the last couple wars we had, right? They were using enhanced interrogations, right? And a person that stood up and said, "This is just wrong," right? Senator John McCain, right? And then there were a couple people, because obviously they didn't do research. Who is he to question this?
Yes.
And those of us been around, it's like, he was POW for 7 years. He still can't. I met a Brit. He still can't lift till he passed. He still couldn't lift his arm past this much, right? And yet, then they go into why they know more, you know, because the big thing is torture doesn't work for answers, because people will say anything when you're in, especially physical distress.
Yes.
What do you want to hear, right? So though. Though verbally, there's the resume statement, and there's also asking the question back to you is a big one. Well, you know, well, where were you last Thursday, Steve? Right? Right. And it's like, okay, you know, that you see that a lot on cop shows, but that one's correct. It's like they try to flip the question back. And then also taking too long of a pause between the request, you know, asking a question and the response. Too, and again, this is depending on, do they have to think about it, right? Yeah. Or is it structuring, you know, how they're going to answer it? But too long of a pause, especially when it, you know, does that. And it's like you always see. Yeah, and you see it in TV shows, and they got it right every once in a while, but you don't catch it unless you know what they're doing. They'll ask you and tell me where you were and give this story. Okay? And you go through it. And one way they test whether it's going on or right is they start at the end and go backwards, or start in the middle and go, and they keep moving, right? So before
So
that, you
before
did
that,
this. Then afterwards, you did that, right? Because if it's really, I hate to say this, if it's true and you don't have to think about it, well, we did this, then we did this, then we announced that. But if it was a story you created, then you're trying to track the story, you know. So, and it's also why, and here's the big thing is, you know, one thing I learned when I was at the academy, when I went there, I was blessed to go to the FBI Academy for that crisis course, hostage negotiation course. You know, I'm sitting there and there's only everybody, almost every, there were two of us that weren't badged officers, as they're called, right? They were a lot of FBI agents, CIA, all these agencies, a lot of foreign people, but they were cops, they were police, you know. So I was one of the few that wasn't anything. And we're sitting at lunch one day, and everybody's talking, and somebody said, well, guy was like assistant special agent in charge, so it's kind of a big wig. They're asking him questions. He goes, what would be the one thing you would tell a normal person when it comes to talking to like an agent, an agency, or the police? And he went, never answer a question, never let them in your house, and show up with a lawyer. He goes, if
Really?
somebody came into my
Wow.
office, I'd say, well, give me your card. I'm going to get on touch my lawyer and we'll set up an interview. And somebody was there, the other person there that, like me, didn't know what was going on. Well, why would you do that? And he goes, because if they really have a case, they're just going to turn you around, cuff you, and take you away. They're trying to build
Right.
it, right? And he goes, you know, and the reason they hate lawyers sometimes, and it's true, you see cop shows when they lawyer up, they get all mad because lawyers take their time on how they're answering, right? And yeah, so I just always tell that little babble story.
So have you worked with lawyers? Have you consulted with
Oh,
lawyers?
yeah. Lawyers are, as a friend of mine said, a guy I knew, I was just really, before I got into all this, but he was a lawyer. I knew him from a personal program we were both in.
Sure.
And we're talking about something. And somebody asked him about, you know, all the lawyer jokes. It's cold in Chicago because all the lawyers have their hands in their own pockets. Things like that. And he goes, well, you got to realize in law school, a good law school, right? When you're in, when you're first, second year, when you start doing things, they go, Steve, we're going to have you argue this case, right? Here are the facts. And let's say it's like it's an abortion case. And they get to know their people and they go, they know that you're a hardcore pro-lifer or a hardcore choice. Doesn't matter. They're going to make you argue the opposite. And you know, if you take it, right? That you, especially first, second year of law school, that's a you could that's it. You're pretty much done, right? And so he goes, you do that several times, what I would say from the psychological standpoint, it rips out a moral compass, right? And it's like why you always see a lawyer will be the prosecutor of a county, and then become a defense attorney. And then maybe go back to be a prosecutor. And from the outside, people go, how could you do that? Well, it's not, what is it? This guy would say, it's not about justice, it's about the law. We think it's justice. No, it's the law. And so lawyers are interesting, right? When it comes to that, right? Especially if you let them get into their professional mode.
So this is just really off the top of my head. My granddaughter is just finished up a mock trial competition, and she wants to be an attorney. That's she's going to go to college next year. So what would, again, this is a little bit off of base, but what advice would you give her as far as pitfalls or the positives of being a lawyer when it comes to
Well,
these kind of things? Like you said, it kind of rips out your view of the world.
yeah. Well, the upside, there's really nothing wrong with that because it makes you look at things. You're not you. Oh, and aside, it's like you ever heard like they'll some politician who's a lawyer and probably been a prosecutor or whatever, and he makes some statements, and the people on the panel that are lawyers go, "Was this guy ever practicing law?" It's like, but the best thing for someone is learn how to truly read people, take classes in, no, this is going to poo-poo one of my professions, not so much psychology, but things like neuro-linguistic programming, hypnosis, things like that. How do people actually think, right? And that'll give you an edge when you go into a situation, right?
Got
Because you're
it.
reading the, how do you read the, okay, here's a quick story. All right, I got to tell you this. My daughter, who I'm proud of to my core, she was going into the Navy, right? After high school, right? I'm a big pro-military. I was in the Army. My dad was Navy. My stepmom was Army. I mean, the whole family's been in the military just about. And she didn't know what she wanted to do. And I'm like, I'll pay for college, but I'm not paying unless you know what you want to do, And she didn't. So I used every skill I had on influence to get her to join the Navy, right? Get her to join the Navy and or join the military. I didn't care what, right? My ex-wife hated me, right? And so I send her like pamphlets, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. I didn't care. I'm sending her everything. She's like, stop this. And I'm like, well, And this was 1998, so there wasn't a war going on. And which, by the way, wouldn't have changed what I was thinking. But, my daughter was like, well. And then I'm trying to use all my tricks, rapport, da, da, da. And, it's kind of like what happens when it's like, nope, shh, shh, no response, right? And then one day, it was right after the holidays, right? Or it was during the holidays. She was at my house for Christmas, and we had a little get together. And the next day, I was getting ready to take my daughter back to her m mother, and I went and like again, she's 17. She goes, "You know, Dad, what was interesting last night?" I go, "What's that?" She goes, "You and Chris," that's her stepmother, "you guys have stories." You know, at this point, I'd been doing all this stuff and been in the army. My wife, Christina, her stepmom, was a showgirl on Ring Ling and was on a couple circuses. And so
Wow.
we had that. And a couple other people would tell things. She goes, "Nothing against everybody else, but they don't have any stories." And at that moment, cha-ching, I had my lever. And I go, "A story's important to you?" And she goes, "Yeah." I go, "You know, you're a senior, you play soccer. What I, you know, all the girls that you played with last year that graduated, what are they doing now?" And she, "Well, so-and-so is going to community college," just what life is, going to college. A few went away to college, you know, some just started work, all that. And I go, "Oh, that's cool. Do they have any stories? You know, other than Joe, you know, runny nose that she's dating or the boss
Right.
and the all that." She goes, "Not really." And I go, "I can guarantee you this. You asked me once, right?" She said, and I go, "I can guarantee you this. If you join the military, regardless of the branch, I guarantee you'll have stories. Some good, some horrible, but you'll have stories that other people don't know about." Right? Because especially, I go, "It's getting even more. You know, the amount of veterans in our population is low. So, you know, it's a story. So, you know, you could join whatever you want, you know, but you'll know what it's like to watch aircraft take off from an aircraft carrier in the middle of the night, or, you know, rappel out of a helicopter, whatever you decide to do." And then she ended
Sure.
up going into the Navy. It's been 11 years, in fact, right? Now
Wow.
she's a cybersecurity expert.
There you go. Well, thank you for sharing that. That's a it is a and it's a great story. You obviously have some great stories, as she is aware of, and now she can create her own stories, right? If she can actually talk about them, right? That's a whole nother issue. So I got another question for you as far as reading people. Why is body language overrated in deception detection?
Well, it's overrated.
Right.
Because it's only one metric. Now I sound like a psychologist. It's only one
It's one
metric
metric
in a
in a
continuum.
canyon.
It's
Okay.
not the
It's
end
not
all and be
in
all,
feel,
right?
right? Yep.
So like there's a common thing about blink rate, right? That one of the things they monitor if you're tracking it is your blink rate. It doesn't matter what your blink rate is. It's how do we start with carrying a conversation? People blink, you know, sometimes real low, like 10 times in a minute. Usually it's up to around like 25 or 30. You're hovering in about 30, right? But if all of a sudden your blink rate changes, you start blinking quickly, you know, it means there's stress. And again, you have to take in, again, body language, you have to take in the environmental things. Is the room really dry? So your eyes are drying. Are you wearing contacts? You got glasses on now. I'm wearing my readers, right?
Right.
But like, you know, if you have contacts in, you blink more, right? Things like that. Or, you know, it slows down. So you quit blinking and you're looking. You know, it means you're just forming things. So there's, or like I said earlier about the crossing the arms or certain movements, it's just one metric, you know, that needs to be confirmed with other things, you know, the language, the things that are going on.
Right. Yeah. So I have a lay question for you because I've seen this in so many different TV shows. Again, because that's where we get a lot of our information, right? As lay people, there's this thing that they say, well, I asked him a question and he like looked down to the left, which means he's lying or something like that. Is there any merit to that?
It's called eye accessing cues. It actually is one of the things NLP brought to the world, right? And it was started with a lady named Virginia Satir, and she noticed how you move your eyes, and then you track it with the language. It's kind of what's going on in your brain, right? And to make it the easiest, it generally is if you look up, you're making pictures, either side, right? You're making pictures. It's a visual cortex, right? You're accessing a different part. If you look side to side, you're making sounds, and if you look down, right, down left, means you're talking to yourself. Down right means you're accessing a feeling. Thus the term, this is downright important to me.
That's fantastic.
It's like, what does that mean? It could be up center, right? And how powerful is that? Well, again, you just know what's going on in people's heads. Back and now, most people would have to go, and so would I, go look at the presidential debate of 1960, right? A couple things happened, and it was when we became a television world, right? Nixon had been on the road, right? So he looked a little haggard because he was doing it. Now, Kennedy took a couple days off, got some sun, and was being coached by media professionals, people that understood television, Peter Lawford, his brother-in-law, and a few other people, right? Nixon, who was a very good public speaker. Everybody forgets that. He was a very good public speaker. Was thinking radio, right? It's kind of like if we're doing this interview, if I knew it was just audio, I might look a little different, And that's so he showed up and he's there. And how powerful it was when they'd ask a question, Kennedy would like the questions over here, the questioner, but he would kind of, as they're telling the question, he'd make eye contact with the camera. Right? This guy is irrelevant asking the question. He's talking to the audience, right? And he would look straight ahead into the camera as he was talking. Right? Nixon would stare this way because he's really digesting the language, right? And then he would like look to the left, look to the right. He was processing how to say the answer. And he basically mostly answered to the person. So, A, if you were watching, look like Kennedy was talking to you, and look like Nixon was talking to this person over here you just happened to hear, right? And again, he was thinking radio. What are the sound bites going to be, right? Not like what are the video clips going to be, And his answers were a lot longer and more nuanced. And Kennedy was the first to start putting it down. Ask not what you could do for your, what your country can do for you. Ask what you could do. Nice little sound bites, right?
Wow, that's a great answer. Great
So yeah.
example.
So and but then like, And you'll see people, if you ask them a question, sometimes they'll look down, to their left. And you'll even see this. They're repeating the question, right? It doesn't mean anything other than putting it in, how can I answer it? Right? Then they may look up like, they're looking for, all it means is you're looking for information, right? Right? And now when this first came out, in the late in the 80s, right, and got popular. Unfortunately, people for a while they don't do it anymore. A lot of times, police would do that, right? You looked up to this means you're lying. No, it doesn't mean anything. You ask me, where was I? I might look up. Maybe I don't remember. So I'm trying to picture it, right? But like one time, I asked my daughter something. I go da da da. She looks up, so she's trying to remember it, but then she looks over here. Right, which is where you create a picture, and then she looked down like how to answer it, and then gave the answer. It's like I'm not quite sure.
She got you there, didn't she? So
Yeah.
that's a great way to lead into the next question, because if you had 30 seconds to profile someone, what would you notice first?
How they're dressed, how they're moving, how they carry themselves. And depending where we're at, right? Because we have these drivers, I call them emotional or psychological drivers that form your identity. And so every interaction is you're trying to reinforce your identity, right? So I wonder what's important to you, right? So like if you're going to do that, it's like. And then the first few things you're listening, usually people tell you a lot, excuse me, a lot of an awful lot of information in the first couple of minutes, right? Because they're trying to make an impression, maybe, or they're talking to you. So that's when they're going to give you the keys to the kingdom.
Sure.
So it's that part.
So that really, that first minute or two of your interaction is going to tell you a lot about that person, correct? What if they don't say a lot? Then you got to go to body language.
Yeah, a lot of it's body language, how they're dressed, what they're doing, and
So,
there could be a reason they don't want to answer.
sure.
You see that a lot on these posts you see on Facebook, which pisses off a lot of people, but I understand it. Cop will come up like at your window or whatever and start asking questions. And the people don't want to give any answers, right? Which actually is a smart thing to do. It's like the one, and it drives me crazy. They'll say, "Yeah, but we're investigating this, and we need to know." And usually it's a guy that's been around the law. Will go, last time I checked, it's not my job to help you in your investigation.
So, in your history, and you again, you've been doing this for decades, what would you say your in all the positions you've held, did you have one position in particular where you were obligated to influence people?
Oh, yeah. My profession in general, psychology,
Okay.
right? I mean, everything's an influence. You're trying to get them to go this way, this way, this. We act like it's a bad thing. It's manipulation, right? Well, therefore, you probably shouldn't be a parent because you're probably trying to influence or get your kids to do the right thing, right? Or sales or whatever you're doing, right? But there's a lot of cool, things that people overlook. And now it's coming back full circle, like NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. It's been around for a long time, but like a lot of things, once it gets out there, then people like they'll read a 3-page article and tell you, I know all about that. And you're like, it's like saying, I understand the concept of what the Homer's about, so I don't need to read the
Right. So what's the difference when you've been challenged by this? What's the difference between ethical influence and dark manipulation?
Nothing. It's based on the person looking at the interaction, right? The
Could you
most, yes.
detail?
And here's one that would piss people off. Somebody comes up to me, right? And they start talking and trying to influence me to go to their church. I don't want to go. I have no desire. Well, we need to save your soul. I'll be dead. I won't care. Right? Now, it's like, but they keep going. Right? That would be, to me, unethical manipulation. Right? But all interaction, you're trying to get people to do something that we think is in their best good, but at the bottom line, it's for your best interest that,
Right.
it's like, and that's a tough pill for people to swallow, right?
So I don't know. I don't watch mainstream TV. Okay.
Okay.
And if you do, what would you say would be blatant manipulative, let's say, commercials or shows?
Well, shows, let me think about that. All commercials are trying to get you to do something,
Right. Yeah.
and like even the news, when you're watching it, it's like the blatant is when some kind of persons ask a question and they won't answer the question. They do like a resume statement, or they'll go off, and you see politicians do it. They go into a talking point, has nothing to do with that. Back in, I forget what election it was, 2004. Somebody's asking Dick Cheney, about something. It had to do with education, I think. And so that's just the format. I don't care whether you what you believe, but that
Right.
was the question. He goes,
Yes.
that's a good question, Steve. America's under attack right now. There are people trying, and it was right to fear, right? And it's like, oh, that's pretty. But a lot of people didn't pick up on it. It's like, that's kind of interesting, you know?
It's an interesting thing you just brought up, and we have a phrase in our house, and I think it's kind of common sometimes. It's called fear porn. And what's the driver behind some of this?
There's a couple things. One, contrary, people like to think I'm an intelligent, articulate, well-read person and I make logical decisions, right? I call BS. That is not true, right? There's a small subsection, right? And usually they fall on the autistic spectrum, but everyone else, it depends on things going on, right? But there's a psychological thing that the fear of loss will motivate you more than the possibility of gain.
Okay.
Right?
Yep, that's
So it's
interesting.
why people, like, they buy a bad stock, unless they've been trained, they're going to hang on to it. Right? Because they've, well, but I've lost $10 a share. I got to hang on to it so it'll, I'll get my money back. Right. Currently going on in our here in the States, as you know, is like, property values are kind of level or dropping, right?
Yes.
And the people that are upset the most are the ones that bought down here. Then they were up here and now it's back here, which is still like, I don't know, your house is worth 100 grand more than when you bought it, but I
Right.
lost 50. You didn't lose it. Unless you went to sell the house, you didn't lose.
Right.
And so that's like fear of what you're going to lose will drive people more than, again, the possibility of gain.
Yeah, it's the fear porn is so rampant in our society. I mean, I live in northern Wisconsin. There was a big storm just recently came through, and it was 27 below zero here 2 nights in a row, right? And don't leave your house, you're all gonna die. Okay, well, I've been doing this for 7 decades, right? And I'm still here. Okay, so I probably figured out that when it's 20 below zero, I should probably take care of myself. But it's nonstop. And it's on the radio, it's on TV, and then people just listen to this. This is just basically human nature programming.
Oh yeah, it's like, as we're recording this today, it's the day after the Super Bowl, right? And the big brouhaha over the halftime show,
Yes.
right? And I'm like, well, first of all, I'm a big, not like I used to be, but I'm a football fan. I rarely watch the halftime show. I'm usually eating something or talking. If I'm at a party, we're doing something else. It's not that big a deal, right?
Sure.
And then also, I would think if you don't want to watch it, hit mute and leave the
Right.
room. But people are
Exactly.
making it like you're losing something, and they built it into you're losing America. We're going to have a different version over here, right? And when they got called out as like, so you got these brown people over here doing this. No, we want to watch these middle-aged over the hill guys over here, right? And it's
Right.
like the fear of losing our culture, right? And that's, even though America has no culture, it's a hodgepodge of everything, right?
Correct.
But it's like, so it's the fear, and you see that driven, and it really got into our heads with when COVID happened. Oh, that was like, I always call it fear porn. Terror porn. Yeah, it's like, and people go,
Well, when they put the number of deaths at the bottom of the TV screen every night, I mean, that was your first indication that.
and they didn't give you a metric. Okay, 10,000 people died today in the United States. And it was a COVID thing, right? Supposedly a COVID. But you go, well, what's the normal metric of how many people die every day in America? It's
Yes.
probably pretty close to 10,000 people. We're a
Exactly.
big country, right? But they would, you know, it's like that, you know. And then they also flipped it into the fear of, well, you need to trust the experts,
Yes.
you know. And then X, expert me, you know, expert. X is a has-been, spurt is a drip under pressure. Most experts are drips under pressure, right?
Wow, that was very well put.
Yeah,
Thank you
and
for
it's
that.
like, yeah, and if you question it, you're questioning the science. Do you understand how science works?
Right.
You know, Galileo didn't go, well, this is the truth. Right? It's you question it, you
Yes.
know. And
Yep.
it was like, ugh, just one after another. So it
Yep.
was just fascinating to me.
Hey,
Yeah, but it's
oh,
still going on, and oh my God.
yeah. Every day. And that's why, you know, part of the reason we don't watch that much mainstream TV is that it's literally programming. That's why it's called TV programming, right? I mean, they're just programming us to believe the things that they want us to believe. So, great question then is, what are psychological skills that you learned when you were working with the FBI that the public never gets taught but should?
What really drives people, right? What really drives people? You know, psychological drivers, emotional drivers. And once you know, if you learn that, it also makes you look at people differently, and not in a bad way, just differently. Yeah, and it's not that complicated. You know, we start thinking, you know, genius is taking complex ideas and making them simple. Our society's built, especially educational system, making simple ideas complex. Right? And then, you know, have you ever heard someone talk that made it sound so confusing when what they were talking about was very simple? You know?
Right.
And that's, you know, to me, that's one of the big things, right? People are simple. And there's nothing wrong with that when I say that, you know. And so I would say that, like, what really drives people? And then that'll just give you some insight to what they're doing and why they're doing what they do.
Sure. So, what's the most dangerous psychological blind spot that makes smart people easy to control? Because you mentioned this a little bit before. So, we're just going to go back to that a little bit.
Well, it would be the fact that they have training, background, and experience, right? Probably some expertise, right? But the blind spot is just because you're an expert in this doesn't mean you know what the hell's going on over here.
Right. Yep.
So they become blind to what's really going on because it's going through their filters of, you know, it should fit in this model of the world. And you can leverage their status, their training, their background experience to help influence them, right?
Sure.
Steve, you're an intelligent guy. I mean, heck, you made CEO of whatever company and you've got a, you know, a PhD in business. Man, that's that. Of course, you know.
Yes.
If I make a statement, you're going to go, oh, yeah. 90% of the people go, oh yeah, even though they can't know because you just made that crap up, right? And then
Exactly.
once they once what's that confirmation bias? Once they confirm that they know, they will defend like it's the truth.
Yep. I deal with this every day. Confirmation bias, I call it cognitive dissonance.
Oh
Okay.
yeah.
You know, it's kind of the same thing. It's kind of just what you call it. You know, I wrote a book about caffeine. Okay, it's not anti-caffeine, yeah, but it talks about the facts, objective truths about what caffeine does to the body and the mind. And no one wants to know. And I've handed the book to friends and family, and the first thing they say to me is, "You can't." And I realize all I did was hand them the book. They say, "You can't take my coffee from me." That would be a confirmation bias, right?
Oh yeah. Yes. Don't confuse me with the facts. I've made my mind up.
Yeah, no. That's a I'm it's going to be hard to go past that line, right? Don't confuse me with the facts, because it's just, and I get this nonstop. You know, I was in a podcast, and the host, I used an analogy to the host that I was like a salmon swimming upstream when I was talking about caffeine. And he chuckled, he stopped me mid-sentence, and he said, "No, Steve, you're more like a salmon swimming against a tsunami."
Oh yeah.
And the analogy was, it's a bigger, when I did, and I've been, the book got published last year, you know, I've been working on this for a year, year and a half, 2 years, whatever. Never did it occur to me, because I had cognitive dissonance here, that there was going to be so much pushback on talking to people on caffeine. And it goes back to, you know, one of my presentations. I play the Folgers commercials. Folgers commercial, wake up to Folgers in your,
Oh yeah.
you know, and I mean, you can smell it, you can taste it. And they go into the bedroom, and the little boys are there, and they're all hovering, and mom and dad are drinking their coffee. And we're now programming those kids that coffee or caffeine, whatever you want to call it, is the key to successful parenting and successful life and a happy family life. And it's just there. And I'm looking, and I tell people this, and they say, "Well, no, they just want you to buy their coffee." No, if you program kids that coffee's good for you, guess what? They're going to drink coffee the rest of their lives, right?
Oh yeah. Well, and I hear you, Steve. Preach, brother, preach.
Yeah.
As I used to say in the Baptist church.
Exactly.
The I could relate it to a couple things, right? Number one, whenever you go against like any kind of addiction, caffeine, but I'll use alcohol, right?
Okay.
But especially caffeine somewhat too, but alcohol especially. It's the only thing that you have to justify not drinking or using. You know, if you're at a Super Bowl, you want a beer? No. Oh, we got wine. No, I'm good. Thank you. You want, we got drink. No, I'm good. Thank you. Is something wrong?
Right. There
Right.
you
And
go.
just, you know, yeah, I always say, yeah, I've converted to a religion where, you know, I have to kill the alcohol or something. You know, it's like, but people, you know, so you have to do that. But then again, the way you just used the Folgers commercial, Maxwell House would be another one, right? Now Starbucks, the place to go, you
Oh,
know?
yeah, right.
And I say that with, that's my addiction. I love Starbucks coffee, because it's dark and bitter like my soul. But the there was a beer commercial, right? Beer commercials, you know. What did they say too? If alcohol was discovered today, they would never allow it on the market.
Right. Yep.
Right?
Same with caffeine. Yep.
Yeah, it's like, but there was a couple commercials, but my favorite was there was a, God, this goes back a while, but maybe you could remember, right? Back in the probably the 90s. For a while, the beer company, and I'd been sober a long time, the beer companies came out with dry beer. Whatever the hell dry beer was, right? And I just remember it, right? There was a commercial. I love the commercial, right? Shows a guy walking down the street with a really attractive lady. It must be like New York or Boston or Philly, somewhere where most the houses have stoops, you know?
Sure.
And so they're walking, and you could hear his inner dialogue. I'm going to tell her, let's just be friends. You know, let's take it slow. He was going to kind of back up. Great. So they get to the stoop. She steps up on the stoop, reaches over, kisses him on the forehead, go, I really like you, but let's just be friends. Then she goes into the house, right? So he's like, You know, because nobody wants to be the dumpy.
Yep.
And then
Right.
it cuts to him in a bar, you know, and they never let show the alcohol, but he's drinking beer. And he's really chatting it up with a couple of stunningly beautiful women. The one on the stoop was attractive. These women were, you know, Christie Brinkley-ish, right?
Sure.
And I am dating myself. And so he's that. And then he's like, then he holds up the beer bottle, and the over voiceover in the deep voice was, "Why ask why? Drink Bud Dry." Which was, don't think, drink. And if you drink the right drink, you'll get this, that, or the other thing, right?
Yes,
It's
right.
not that, you know, and the whole idea, right, is that way, you know. I mean, yesterday, I forget, Super Bowl has less beer commercials than others, but they still have it, you know. And it's just like the cute commercial yesterday was the Budweiser commercial. Everybody waits for the Clydesdale yesterday with
Right.
the, it's like really stunning, but what the hell's that got to do with beer?
Nothing, right. It's just like Coca-Cola and the polar bears. And now Pepsi, I saw a commercial. The Pepsi has polar bears on their commercials now. Because apparently polar bears are the way to sell soda or pop.
It's
Right?
cold. It's
Yes, that's right.
It's endangered. I should
Yes, right.
say, drink
Too
this
bad
shit. It
yours.
will kill you. It will
Take
kill
yours
you.
today because you never know when it's going to be extinct, right? All we got to do is go back to global warming, where there's now like two or three times more polar bears than where there were in, 20 or 30 years ago, because global warming is going to kill all the polar bears. Okay, again, fear porn. So let's talk. We're going to wrap up soon, but I would like to hear about what you do. I've been to your website. We're going to have link that, in the show notes, and give you a chance for people to talk about it, but. In your classes, how do you present your classes? Is it a learning experience?
Most people train, it's a data dump. They teach the information. I switched mine a few years ago. It's a transformational experience, Again, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day. Knowledge, people say knowledge is power. I agree with Tony Robbins. He's the first I heard say, it's probably an old saying, which is no, applied knowledge is power.
Okay.
Knowledge is like a library. If you don't go in there and open the book, nobody knows, right? But so most trainers and speakers do that. They just teach the information, right? But when you look at the really highly effective, and they may not be the highest paid, but they seem the most effective, you know, they create transformations in their clients or in the people they're talking to, right? Whether you like Tony Robbins or not, and he comes from my world, NLP, he took NLP like just a year before I did. But I got stuck in trying to teach the information. He figured out early on, no, it's the transformation, right? The Tony events are, they're shows, they're like movies. He comes, you know, you
Yes.
grew up in Hollywood, so he had that mindset, right? Which is, it's an experience, right? That's why Tony Robbins will get 4,000 to 8,000 people in a room. Right. And most people trying to teach stuff get, you know, 5 to 50 if they're lucky. Right.
Right.
Because they,
Exactly.
you know, and so there's that, you know, and so that's what I try to do. Give them information they can use in the real world. Like use a psychological thing is people talk about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, you go from substance all the way up to like enlightenment, and that's what everybody's striving to get there. And I'm like, I don't know. I come from Gary, Indiana. There's a whole bunch of guys. As long as they had cold beer in the fridge, a pizza in the oven, and the game didn't matter what game—football, baseball, basketball. This is your part of the world. As long as they weren't going to go to enlightenment, right? So that's
Right.
good information. I understand it. How do you use it in the real world? Right. And so if you do that, then people are much more likely to take the information and use it.
So how long does that last? How long do your classes last? Is it over a period of time, self-paced, or just with you?
Well, it's I have both. You can buy things online, but I do
Okay.
trainings. Like I have a trainer's training coming up. Train like a performer because that's my other world is theatrical,
Sure.
and that's gonna. There's like six modules. They're between 2 and 4, or 2 to 5 hours, but I try to keep everything short to a couple of hours of classes. So again, I'd rather because I think we default really quickly when you start doing this. You default to want to be like a college professor,
Yes.
dry information, big, I mean, the best-selling books. A friend of mine has written like 40 something books. I think he has 8 true bestsellers, right? In the self-development psychology sales world.
Sure.
And he taught me one thing. He goes, and if you write a whatever 250 to 300 page book, most people never read past chapter 3.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm like, and he goes, now we might be different. You might be the first that you get a book, you bookmark it, you do this. But if you get honest, how many times you pick up a book, you read it, and you're like, this is really good. I'll get back to it. And yet, so he goes, you got to front load everything. So I'm sitting there going, and that's why people are drawn to things like Who Moved My Cheese, The 1 Minute Manager. The original, excuse me, Chicken Soup for the Soul was very short. It was like you could pick it up, read a page. That's kind of cool. Like it, and you might go do it. Then the next day, read another page. So, and that's also the way it looks like publishing's going because social media is already going there. People want shorts or Instagrams or TikToks. Right? They don't want the
No, I understand. So, where can people reach you?
Through my probation office. No.
Well, we're going to need his number, okay?
Well, if you go to the easiest is Horton Psychology, HortonPsychology. I have to do it on my fingers.
Yep, there you go.
dot
Whatever
com.
works.
And I've got stuff going on there. You can get the book there
There you go.
and
Good job.
other books. The two books I recommend for people who want to learn how to do this is this, and I don't have the other one sitting here. It's called Mind Control, How to Get Others to Do What You Want and Have Them Think It Was Their Idea.
There you go. Excellent. Yes. Have you ever, and this is a big tangent again, have you ever read Rape of the Mind?
No, I'll have to look that up.
Okay. Yeah. It is about the programming of the Nazis to their population. And it's kind of brutal. In fact, it's painstaking. You can't read more than one or two pages sometimes at a time because it's too painful. And I haven't finished it yet. I mean, it's a work in progress, but it's what you just it triggered my memory in that I want to finish it, but I have to make myself read it because it's so painful. Because they got but whole families, whole battalions of German citizens, they programmed them, and they were supposedly Christian based people, okay? They got them to go and literally wipe out Jewish communities in Poland and the Soviet Union when they were advancing.
Oh yeah.
And these guys did it willingly.
Well, it's going to be a political statement. I never thought I would see some of the crap going on
Right.
that I see here. And it's all
Yes.
under Christianity,
Yes.
right? I think the buzzword they use is Christian nationalism.
Right.
Because whenever this comes up and I'm in a recovery program, and one thing I like about the recovery program is politics and any of that shit's not allowed to be discussed. I don't want to know what you think
Yes.
because it's going to do things. But the easiest way to get people to take horrible actions is through a deep belief that links you to a higher power. I'm doing this in the name of God. I always say, like, I was at a motivational thing and they're talking about the best motivators. They're using the writer Carnegie and they go down this. And some guy goes, "Nope. Well, who do you think it is?" He goes, "Osama bin Laden." And the guy goes, "What?" He goes, "We try to get people to buy cars," or it was mostly cars, "cars and insurance products. We have a tough time." He gets people to strap on vests or jump on an airplane and commit suicide. That is powerful. But they were doing it for a greater good. And those Germans believed they were doing it for a greater good.
It's but thank you for your feedback. So
You
but
can edit
it's
that out. I don't care.
right. No, I'm this is I mean they'll be editing, but not much. It's all here. And they need to know who you are, who I am. The bottom line is that if you liked what you saw today, please subscribe and hit like, and please go to Dr. Horton's site. And this is fascinating stuff. I want to thank you so much. Rarely do people, lay people, and I consider myself a lay person in this circumstance. We don't get to see this side of what you'd call authority or government. I've been exposed to a little bit because I have a background in self-sabotage and mind control, and so I've watched hundreds probably of videos of mind control. And what fascinates me is that you can kind of get anybody to do anything if you're really good at it.
Yeah, there's not much. Look at history.
Right,
You
exactly.
know, it's like, here's a quick one to close with. If you one way to test a person's ego strength is if they make a statement. Like, if you told me a statement, if I know you have a little self-sabotage, you make me a statement, I'll go, "Are you sure?" And if they have self-doubt, they'll pull back and want to, if they're strong, and especially in that strong ego, they'll go, "No, it's it. No, that's it." Right? But if you run toward doubt, you'll go, "Are you sure?"
Question them, yeah, and then they question themselves, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, excellent. It has been a pleasure,
Thank you.
and maybe we'll see us ourselves again sometime. There we go. Look at that. You got the heart. You did. You practiced that, didn't you?
Yeah.
Okay. Again, it's a pleasure. Thank you
Thank
so
you.
much.